RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Okay, it's time for our semi-regular catch-up with Kit Knightley, editor of Off Guardian. Beaming in from the UK, Off Guardian asks what's behind various media narratives and why. They're dedicated to open discourse and free expression and often host articles from both sides of an issue at off-guardian.org. So, Kit Knightley, editor of Off Guardian, is with us right now. Kit, welcome back to RCR. Nice to have you back. I hope you're well.
Yeah, fine. Thanks, Paul.
Gosh, how much of a clown world is it now?
It's getting clownier. There's no doubt about that. The clown to non-clown ratio is definitely going exponential.
Want to chat with you some of the big stories that you're covering, but in their own right, they're all around the world now, these stories. And there'll be particular interest on Bovaer. We'll talk about that shortly because we're only coming to terms with that now being a farming nation. But first to the situation in Syria. I'm wondering what you're thinking about this. Seems to me a couple of things are obvious. First of all, Assad didn't put up any fight, did he?
I mean, that's the most interesting part of the story. I mean, considering how long the war had been going on, and how much of a fight the Syrian army and Assad himself had put up. Like, the way it collapsed so fast after nothing happening for years is very curious. I mean, it suggests there's quite a lot we don't know about what happened on the ground at the moment. Not just on the ground, but also in boardrooms and meeting rooms before the new attack started, for want of a better word.
Yeah, someone was, supplying weapons to those, I'll call them folk. That's a nice term, isn't it? Someone was supplying weapons. I'm wondering, the weaponry left in Afghanistan by the United States pulling out. We all saw those images. I wonder where that's ended up.
Well, that's true. I mean, even if it's not there, you could certainly see, in a weird way, there's a parallel. The America pulling out of Afghanistan was supposed to be chaotic, and it was supposed to be like, oh my God, we left these weapons behind. Oh, it's so terrible. But I mean, if you actually dig into the situation, it was apparent there was some kind of quid pro quo agreement going on whereby the weapons were some sort of part of a deal. It was just that America couldn't be seen to leave them behind on purpose. You see, so, oh my God, we left the weapons behind. Taliban gets them. It's part of the pullout agreement.
Hmm.
Whatever happened to those particular weapons, you can see a parallel in Syria that maybe some deal has gone down. And that's the reason this is, you know, if they can't be seen to just give up, you know, Russia and Iran can't be seen to just give up Syria. But it's possible something like that has happened. And that the reason the Assad regime folded inside 8 days after fighting for 10 years is that it wasn't really a fight. It was a semi-organized transfer of power. That's just a hypothetical theory at the moment, but it explains what we know so far.
And the main players are Israel, US, and Turkey, it seems.
Yeah. I mean, they always have been in Syria, but those three have always been like the big backers of the other side. Because, I mean, obviously, because Turkey and Israel have their eyes on bits of Syria anyway.
Isn't there an idea to put an overland pipeline between Qatar?
Well, yeah, that was the source back in the pre-COVID day when geopolitics made more sense than it does now. That was that was one of the big reasons for the Syria war started in the first place, is conflicting pipelines.
Yeah, but if follow the money, that's always something.
Yeah.
Hmm. And then Israel bowls up close to Damascus. I wonder if they'll get a road to Damascus experience. Probably won't. So they're close in, but it wouldn't be in their interest to control the country, would it?
I wouldn't have thought so. Not the whole thing. They'll snip off a few bits in the name of creating, what do they call them, buffer zones. But they're not going to just charge right up to Damascus and take the whole thing, I wouldn't have thought. I mean, having proxies in charge is more useful and more helpful anyway. Because proxies, I mean, this is the reason Al-Qaeda, I mean, historically, the reason Al-Qaeda exists and offshoots of Al-Qaeda is because as proxies, they can do things that America wants them to do without officially being American.
Yeah, including beheading people if it's needed.
That kind of thing, yeah.
Oh, gosh. The rebels, they are being called rebels, aren't they? They've gone from terrorists to rebels in the report.
Yeah, in Britain it's official now. They're no longer on the terrorist list, which is itself a strange thing to do, because no one sees the terrorist list. Like, they could easily just not have mentioned it. I don't know why they did. The messaging is clear, yeah.
Yeah, they'd be disposable in the end, wouldn't they, if this is a bigger game, those rebels? Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, this was an interesting thing I actually saw on social media, is, you know, how the leader of the rebels is, you know, he's now wearing sort of Zelensky green tracksuit rather than his usual, you know, the usual jihadi getup. And he's not meant to be, he's the radicalized HTS. They're no longer radicalized. And people are saying, oh, you can't trust this, because once in charge, they'll institute, you know, fundamentalist Islamic law. They're still Islamic fundamentalist, really. But the more interesting other side of that argument is, I mean, were they ever really, or are many terrorist leaders who, like, supposedly support this fundamentalist Islam approach, how many of them are really just intelligence assets playing a part? I mean, you can't, the answer is the same either way, really. I mean, they're puppets who do what they're told, but I think it's more likely that he was never really like that, and he just says what his handlers tell him to say.
Comes from the same acting school as the other guy. Zelensky and this new chap have the same drama coach.
Well, they certainly have the same wardrobe fitter at the moment.
Yes. All right, interested in Assad, just coming back to him, you kind of get the impression, and what do I know, but from the reporting and everything, that he probably just had a guts full of the whole thing.
Well, that's there are people saying that, and you can understand it if he had done. It certainly doesn't fit his previous discussions, his previous public statements to just go. I don't think he's been publicly seen yet, has he still?
Well, that's another point, yeah.
So, I mean, they say he's in Russia. I suppose he probably is. It would be very odd to say he was if he wasn't, but I mean, that he's yet to make a public statement is interesting.
He's back to the ophthalmology business, apparently. Imagine ending up with an appointment with him.
Some ordinary guy who doesn't follow the news turning up in to his ophthalmology appointment in Moscow.
Don't I recognize you? Haven't I seen you somewhere before?
No.
Yeah. I recognize the chin. Well, the lack of it, if people have been saying. Kind of a set piece move going on in front of us, and the reason will be, well, it's on the list of the seven countries that the neocons wanted to, or declared that they wanted way back, what, Rumsfeld era?
That was a long time ago. It was General Wesley Clark leaked that back in, what, 2004,
right.
2005?
Yeah.
That's seven. That's six of the seven. They're still well behind.
Okay.
I'm well behind it. What was it? It was seven countries in 5 years, back in 2003. So we've done six of the seven after 21 years.
In terms of the reaction of Iran, I've been seeing people saying, hearing it, that it forces them into kind of a nuclear situation now, because Syria was a supply line for weaponry and everything for proxies, and it sort of isolates Iran, and that could force them, if they're not nuclear nuke already, to kind of bring out the nuclear weapons and show them off and say, hey, you know, here we are.
I don't know. I mean, Iran's in an interesting phase, because they've got a new president this year, obviously. I mean, much of the world has. It's been like the biggest election year ever, is what they called it. And we've had changes of government all over the world, including a new sort of, what's the word, more progressive Iranian president. What their stance is going to be publicly, I don't know. I mean, it could be, I mean, we saw them get on board with COVID, so they could be completely behind this. As far as the movement goes, there could be some sort of tit-for-tat trade going on regarding Syria. I don't know. It will be interesting what they do publicly and what they say publicly and what they actually do. It's always an interesting thing to contrast.
And there's always Netanyahu, who seems to be on some kind of religious, making the prophecy go real.
If I was Benjamin Netanyahu, though, I wouldn't be sleeping too comfortably, honestly. Right. I think he's entirely disposable and is becoming more so the more stupid stuff he says. I think he, we've had, like I said, we've had changes of government everywhere, more or less. I wouldn't be surprised to see like a sort of Israeli Jacinda Ardern take over from Benjamin Netanyahu at some point. You know, a sort of progressive, let's all be nice, and if you're not nice, I'll put you in the camp for bad people.
Yeah. Well, maybe she's just waiting for that. It's an interesting point you make, though, because the assumption is that America always comes to Israel's aid, and you know that Israel has a disproportionate influence on the US, but it could be the other way around. It could be that Israel's totally disposable when it comes to US thinking as well. It's just a handy base right now, you know?
Well, I mean, we mentioned like proxies, like jihadi proxies and their purpose, and historically, in a weird way, Israel actually serves that same function. Israel does stuff that America can't do, but it functions basically like an unsinkable aircraft carrier, to use an old phrase used to describe Britain. It's a little landing post for the American Empire in the Middle East, and does stuff technically like on its own that Americans can disavow, even if, you know, covertly the Americans want them to do it. And then it also acts as a blame sponge. There's a lot of people that blame Israel for doing things that probably they do for American reasons and with American backing.
All right, moving on, because I've got to think of time. Bovair and the knowledge now in the UK, particularly, that the compound Bovair has been showing up in products in supermarkets. What sort of reaction has that had, Kit?
Well, an encouraging one from some points of view, definitely. People are absolutely, they're boycotting it. Shelves are full of products for companies associated with Bovair. I mean, considering like the big dairy supplier trialing the product in this country, Arla, said they were doing it on 30 farms, but they are associated with 2,500. So the vast majority of Arla products probably have never had the stuff anywhere near them. But the just brand association is causing big boycotts across massive brands. Usually, as you know, there's no point in naming them because you probably have Lovepak and Cravendale and stuff like that. They're just staying on the shelves. But then, I mean, one interpretation that I wrote about on Off Guardian is that since we're being discouraged from eating dairy anyway, it could be quite a clever manipulation to get people to boycott dairy so they feel like they're choosing not to eat it.
Yeah.
I mean, if they make good on the government's promise to put Bovair in everything to save the planet because the world is stupid and crazy, as we said, then suddenly people who are boycotting Bovair will have to boycott all dairy or just accept that they're going to have to eat the stuff.
If there's a war on farming, then shutting down dairy or reducing dairy and red meat, I suppose, is you're getting somewhere.
I mean, that comes into the other stuff, doesn't it? The inheritance tax stuff. In the end, any boycott, of course, of these dairy things is going to hurt farm profits as much as anything else. So it could be, as much as it was like positive to see people take a stand on that kind of thing, it could be that they're being played in the end, which would be clever, but not very nice.
You make the point in the story that I'm reading here that the UK government approved Bovair in December 2023. Well, that's a year ago, and there's already been a trial.
Yeah.
So nothing new.
So the fact that it suddenly hit the headlines again in like a massive way is interesting. I mean, sometimes stories do just happen to go a bit viral by accident. It does happen, but not as much as they say that it does.
Bovair, I always think it sounds like some sort of cheap perfume or something.
Yeah, I haven't yet seen, despite reading about it, why it's called that and what it actually stands for. I assumed it was some kind of abbreviation.
Yeah.
Bovine something, I suppose.
Yeah, you're probably right, yeah. I want to get me some of that Bovair and slap it on next time I go out. All right, and bird flu, the next pandemic, is right on schedule. There's another story on Off Guardian. We've had a scare here, but not for H5N1. Yeah.
H5N7 there, right?
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe even a 6 and an, I don't know, eyes glaze over with all that. But you say it's right on schedule. What do you mean right on schedule?
Well, I mean, this, I think, if I remember right, this would be the first article we ever talked about months back. I wrote an article predicting what the next pandemic would be. And I predicted they would use bird flu, but it wouldn't really start until January 2025 at the earliest, because they needed to be flu season in the Northern Hemisphere. And since 2024 is the biggest election year ever, they want to change up the roster of world leaders so you don't have too many people associated with COVID in charge.
And, okay. Timing's everything. Yep.
And that has happened. Biden is gone now. I mean, Biden went years ago, but Biden's body is going now too.
Yeah.
We've got lovely, friendly Labour government in the UK now. Iran's got a new government. I'm not sure what might happen in France. I mean, it might be Macron goes any day soon. I mean, it's a bit of chaos over there. Ardern is gone. Merkel is gone. There's a whole new roster of faces.
Yeah, the decks have been cleared, haven't they, of the old personalities?
But
Trump is there. That's the interesting thing.
That is the interesting thing. That is interesting that they went back to Trump. It's interesting. But it perhaps shows what sort of thing the bird flu pandemic, which I'm now increasingly sure is going to happen at some point, probably early 2025.
Yeah.
I mean, even today, it just keeps on going. It's showing signs of mutating to humans and stuff. That's just from a few hours ago. I just happened to see that when I woke up.
Oh, great. Well, it's all that gain of function, right? I mean, anyone who doesn't think that's been going on in the background probably needs a wake-up call.
I mean, maybe they'll just say that it's... I mean, they could just say it. This is the beauty of the system they set up in COVID is that they can just say stuff. And with the way the testing works and with the way the 100-day vaccines will work, it will be so much faster than COVID anyway that there won't be time to stop and analyze each small thing they say.
And when you think about it, well, it didn't take Trump out, COVID, did it? But it was like an anchor chain dragging all the way through along with everything else. This is a perfect way to hang him up. But mind you, they're all the same people, Kit, anyway. So whether they're hanging him up or not, it doesn't really matter, does it?
Mm. Well, what COVID did do in the small scale, and probably anybody that's ever read much of what I've read the last year and a bit or listened to me talk very much is tired of me saying this, but it keeps being true, so I keep having to say it. What COVID did do is reveal these, you know, loyalties. They revealed basically everyone was on the same side, and that in a sort of small scale as well as the global scale applies to American politics, because Trump was meant to be like the anti-establishment guy, and yet when COVID rolled around, he did lockdowns, he did Operation Warp Speed and got the vaccines out. So Trump's re-election was, and his re-election campaign, you could see, was about trying to reassert and re-win some anti-establishment credentials, and how that affects the next pandemic going forward, considering that now he's got RFK with him and stuff like that. How that contrasts with the early handling of COVID will be interesting. And you could see that they might do a lot of deliberate incompetence in order to make it that bird flu is all Trump and Kennedy's fault or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah. Right. And there could even be another... Well, I don't know if it would be packaged as Operation Warp Speed, but a quick deployment of a solution, you know?
Oh, well, all over the world now, because one of the sort of undersold talking points since COVID has been the launch of the World Health Organization's 100-day vaccine plan. So we find a new disease, we sequence its genome, we create a vaccine, and we get that vaccine injected into people in 100 days, which is remarkable because... Back in 2020, it was well known that creating a vaccine took about 10 years.
Well, that is Operation Warp Speed right there.
I mean, basically. I mean, it's funny because Operation Warp Speed was if actually you go back and read like liberal commentators talking about Operation Warp Speed in like April 2020, they're all saying, oh, I wouldn't inject Trump's poisonous vaccine. Yeah. There's no way it's going to be safe.
Yeah.
But when the WHO launches Operation Warp Speed 2.0 and they get a new vaccine in 100 days, they're going to be absolutely selling that like you wouldn't believe.
And people will line up for it.
Absolutely.
Hmm. All right. Well, that's a good chat. Thank you, Kit Knightley, for beaming in. Have a great, will you get time off? Are you celebrating Christmas?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you have to celebrate what you can when you can.
A good point. Yeah. Well, and I'm saying this on behalf of our audience, really appreciate your sort of reporting in and from your perspective. It's been really interesting and valuable. So I hope we can continue doing that. So have a great break if you're having one. And we'll see you probably in 2025, Kit.
Yeah, you have a Merry Christmas.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers and more, the RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.